Text number 13.
Asan varnas trayohyasya.
Asan varnas trayohyasya.
Vihnato nuyugam tanuhu.
Vihnato nuyugam tanuhu.
Shuklo raptas tata pita.
Shuklo raptas tata pita.
Idanim krishnatam gataha.
Idanim krishnatam gataha.
Asan varnas trayohyasya.
Asan varnas trayohyasya.
Krihnato nuyugam tanuhu. Shuklo raktas tata pita.
Shuklo raktas tata pita.
Idanim krishna tam gataha.
Idanim krishna tam gataha.
Asan.
Asan.
Were assumed.
Varnatrayaha.
Three colors.
He.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Asya. Of your son Krishna. Grihnataha. Accepting. Anuyugam tanuhu. Transcendental bodies according to the different yugas.
Transcendental bodies according to the different yugas.
Shuklaha.
Sometimes white.
Raktaha, sometimes red. Tata,
as well as.
Pitaha,
sometimes yellow.
Idanim krishnatam gataha.
At the present moment, he has assumed a blackish color.
Translation in purport. By Srila Prabhupada. Your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium in the past. He assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he has appeared in a blackish color. In another Dwarpa Yuga,
sit still.
He appeared as Lord Ramachandra in the color of Shuka, a parrot. All such incarnations have now assembled in Krishna. Purport. Partially explaining the position of Lord Krishna and partially covering the facts, Gauga Muni indicated, your son is a great personality and he can change the color of his body in different ages. The word grihnataha indicates that Krishna is free to make his choice. In other words, he is the supreme personality of Godhead and may therefore do whatever he desires. In Vedic literature, the different colors assumed by the personality of Godhead in different millennia are stated, and therefore when Gauga Muni said, your son has assumed these colors, he indirectly said, he is the supreme personality of Godhead. Because of Kamsa's atrocities, Gauga Muni tried to avoid disclosing this fact. But he indirectly informed Nanda Maharaj that Krishna, his son, was the supreme personality of Godhead. I'll make some comment here. The verse only says he had three other colors. Which he took in different ages. Oh, he says bodies also. Okay, different bodies. Prabhupada talks about incarnations in the translation. Well, doesn't mean that Gauga Muni is not saying that Krishna is God and he has his avatars. But he took bodies of different colors. He's not coming out and saying that Krishna is God. Prabhupada explains that in this paragraph of the purport. Your son is a great personality. And he can change the color of his body in different ages. Grihnataha, and Prabhupada points out, Grihnata means he intentionally chose. We, by the force of our karma, take various bodies. We die and take another body. And the colors change also for us. We have a white body, a black body, a yellow body, a chameleon body with different colors, butterfly body with many colors. But it's not our choice. We don't voluntarily choose these bodies. They're chosen for us by the calculation of our karma. We don't even know what body we're going to take. What does it mean of choosing it? How can you claim that you chose it when you can't even, you claim that you have chosen your next body? Then I will ask for you to prove it by telling me, well, what body is it going to be? And you don't know. You can't pretend to know. So how can you pretend that it's your choice? It isn't, but it's Krishna's choice. Bahuni mevyati tani janmani tavacharjuna. I've taken many births, and Arjun, you've also taken many births, but there's a difference. Tanyaham veda sarvani natvam veta parantapa. Oh, you're a great conqueror of enemies, but you're not God. I'm God. You don't know. You don't even remember your past births, what to speak of knowing your future births. You can't even remember your past births. Who in this room remembers what he was in the previous life? One previous life. What does it make of hundreds of previous lives? Krishna remembers them all. He knows, he's all-knowing and omniscient. Everything he does, he knows what's happening, what he's doing, what everybody else is doing, he knows everything. And he does whatever he wants. He has all power to do whatever he wants without restriction. So he can easily choose his next body. Nobody else. No conditioned soul can do that. Even the liberated souls don't try to do that. Maybe there's some rare case where a blessing was given, you can pick your next body. But we don't hear generally, I don't know any case, of a devotee, a pure devotee, who had the choice of what his next body was going to be. It was predetermined, especially if he becomes liberated, then he attains his svarupa. That's not our choice. That is our constitutional eternal position. We don't choose it. It's not like going, getting a gift certificate for Christmas and you can go to the mall and buy anything you want. And you don't get a gift certificate, You've earned liberation and you get in the mail, an email message. You've earned liberation. Here's your gift certificate. Pick out your own body. It doesn't work like that. It's already fixed. It's already predetermined. And if you whimsically think, oh, I'm a gopi, I'm nothing else but a gopi, or I'm a monkey in Hanuman in Lord Ramachandra's army, you may have a whim in your mind to think that's your sarupa, but your whim doesn't determine your sarupa. It's just a mental fantasy that you have that may very likely not be true to the facts. You may be something else than the best of the gopis, or a monkey in Lord Ramachandra's army. You may be something else, and you're just concocting prematurely. Swarupa will be revealed when we're ready for it. Or if you are given this Siddha Pranali, okay, it's an authorized process. The guru may reveal to the disciple at initiation. But that's for a qualified disciple being given by a qualified, fit guru. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was not in favor of that practice. So we don't practice it in ISKCON. Prabhupada never told a disciple at initiation what his eternal identity was, other than you're Krishna's servant. Okay, I'm going to continue the purport. I only read one paragraph in those 2 pages. It may be noted that Srila Jiva Goswami, in his book Krama Sandarbha, has enunciated the purport of this verse. In every millennium, Krishna appears in a different form, either white, red, or yellow. But this time, he personally appeared in his original blackish form, and as predicted by Gargamuni, exhibited all the powers of Narayana. Because in this form the Supreme Personality of Godhead exhibits himself fully,
His name is Sri Krishna, the all-attractive. Factually, Krishna is the source of all avatars. And therefore, all the different features of the different avatars are present in Krishna. When Krishna incarnates, all the features of other incarnations are already present within him. Other incarnations are partial representations of Krishna, who is the full-fledged incarnation of the Supreme Being. It is to be understood that a Supreme Being, whether appearing as Shukla, Rakta, or Pita, white, red, or yellow, is the same person. When he appears in different incarnations, he appears in different colors, just like the sunshine, which contains seven colors. Sometimes the colors of sunshine are represented separately. Otherwise, the sunshine is observed mainly as bright light. The different avatars, such as the Manvantara avatars, Lila avatars, and Dasha avatars, are all included in the Krishna avatara. When Krishna appears, all the avatars appear with him. As described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Avataraya Sankyeya Harer Sattva Nide Dvijaha Yata Vidasina Kulyak Sarasak Siu Sahasrasha. The avatars incessantly appear like incessantly flowing water. No one can count how many waves there are in the flowing water. And similarly, there is no limitation of the avatars. And Krishna is the full representation of all avatars, because he is the source of all avatars. Krishna is Amshi, where others are Amsha, part of Krishna. All living entities, including us, are Amshas. Mamaivamsho, Jiva Loke, Jiva Lokak Sanatana, Jiva Bhutak Sanatanaha. These Amshas are of different magnitude. Human beings, who are minute Amshas, and the demigods, Vishnu Tattva, and all other living beings are all part of the Supreme. Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam, Katha Upanishad. Krishna is the full representation of all living entities. And when Krishna is present, all avatars are included in him. The 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Could you ask them not to talk loudly? The 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes the incarnations for each yuga in chronological order. The Bhagavatam says, Krite Shuklas Chatur Bahu Tretayam Vaktavarno Sau Dvapare Bhagavan Siyama and Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishnam. These are four different verses describing each of the four colors of avatars. Yuga Dharma avatars. We actually see that in Kali Yuga, Bhagavan has appeared in Pita Varna, or a yellow color, as Gaurasundara, although the Bhagavatam speaks of Krishna Varnam. To adjust all these statements, one should understand that although in some yugas some of the colors are prominent, in every yuga, whenever Krishna appears, all these colors are present. Krishna Varnam Tvisha Krishnam. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears without Krishna or a blackish color, he is understood to be Krishna himself. Idanim Krishna Tam Gataha. The same original Krishna has appeared in different varnas. Who appears in different varnas has now appeared. The word asan indicates that he is always present. Whenever the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in his full feature, he is understood to be Krishna Varnam, although he appears in different colors. Prahlad Maharaj states that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Channa. That is, although he is Krishna, he is covered by a yellow color. Thus the Gaudiya Vaishnavas accept the conclusion that although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in a Pita color, he is Krishna. Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishnam Sangopang Astra Parshanam Yagyaik Sankirtana Prayayar Yajantihi Sumedasaha Bhavatam 11.5.32.
So, although Gauranga Muni doesn't say directly that Krishna is an avatar, but he says he has these colors. And they are, for those who are familiar with the other teachings of the Bhagavatam, know that these are the colors of the four Yuga Dharma avatars. In each age, there's a special avatar. Maybe Krishna himself, maybe an expansion, or it may even be an empowered Jiva. That avatar, his function is to establish the particular appropriate principles of religion for that age. Of course, there are Varnashram principles, there's principles for yogis, what they should do, and there's principles for devotees. We're actually talking about Bhagavad Dharma. What each of those Yuga Dharma's avatars are establishing is not general Karmakanda or Jnanakanda principles, but the principles of the highest Dharma, Bhagavad Bhakti, devotion to the Supreme Person. The Supreme Person doesn't need to come, usually, to teach mundane principles. That other various rishis can do that. There's so many rishis ready to, what's a rishi's business? To meditate, maybe do some puja, and teach. If they want to make some money, if they want to eat, they probably have to teach. Unless they just sit there doing the ajagarana vrata and just making no endeavor and just waiting till someone puts food in his mouth. If they want to make a living, then a rishi has to be a teacher. He has to have disciples. So there's plenty of rishis eager to tell everybody what the principles of religion are, because that's how they make a living. And that's how that's their function. If they want to, maybe that's too harsh an analysis. So to be fair to the rishis, maybe they want to contribute something to humans' welfare, the welfare of human society. So what can they contribute? They can contribute the realizations of their learning. And human society needs to know how to organize itself. What principles, what religious principles various kinds of people should follow. So the rishis are always there and eager, ready to go, to instruct the principles of religion in the ordinary sense. Varnashram dharma, stri dharma, dana dharma, raja dharma, the duties of a woman, of a king, how to give charity, how to keep yourself clean. These things, there are plenty of rishis available and eager to teach those things. If you look in the Rishi phone book, there's hundreds of names for each department of knowledge, ready to go, ready to be in action, eager to teach. The personality of Godhead normally doesn't have to do that himself. But to teach the transcendental principles of pure devotional service, it takes a pure devotee, and in this field, the Supreme Lord is interested in participating in the teaching himself. He comes as the Yuga Dharma avatars, or he appoints somebody, an empowered jiva, to teach in every age the basic principles of devotional practice. Kriteya dhyayato vishnum. Tretayam yajato makai. Dwar pare paricharyayam. Kalau tadhari kirtanat. In the Satya Yuga, also called Treta Yuga, there's the practice of Dhyayato Vishnu, meditating on Lord Vishnu. The meditational yoga practice is the method of practicing Krishna consciousness in the Satya Yuga. The method is there in other ages. It's still here today. You can go to any English-speaking bookstore or any Hindi bookstore, or any bookstore in India, and get books on yoga practice. You can get the original Sanskrit shastras. You can get translations into your own language and books in your own language on how to practice yoga. The practice is still going on, even in our modern age. But in the Satya Yuga, it was the method of becoming Krishna conscious. It isn't now. You will not become Krishna conscious by practicing Hatha Yoga or Patanjali Yoga or Raja Yoga or any of those yogas. They will not lead you to devotion and love for the personality of Godhead. They don't serve that function in Kali Yuga. Those who have practiced yoga in their lives, they know that. That they weren't taught, the devotion to Krishna was not given to them in the practice of their yoga. But in Sati Yuga, it is the authorized method for becoming a devotee of Krishna. By meditating on him, that's how you approach him. You don't have to wave a lamp on his face. You don't have to pour butter on a fire. You don't even have to open your mouth. Just sit down and meditate. That is the proper method for Sati Yuga. Why not just chant Hare Krishna, even in Sati Yuga? The chanting is there. Sankirtan is an eternal process. It doesn't exist only in Kali Yuga. One explanation is that it's too simple. If you tell people in Sati Yuga, who are very powerful and have very great spiritual capacities, that means they have great capacities for thinking very deeply and performing austerities, they can practice severe yoga. And you tell them you just sing and dance, just mumble, you know, your mantra, they say, that can't be it, it's too easy. They want something challenging. It's like Banasura with his 1,000 arms beating apart mountains because he wanted to fight with somebody. So like that, the very powerful inhabitants of Sati Yuga have got too many capacities and they want to use them. They don't want to just sit down there and chant Hare Krishna. They also chant, but they need something to challenge them. So they're given the severe practice of meditational yoga. And so on. In each of the ages, there's in Treta Yuga, the practice of offering sacrifices into the sacred fire. In Dwarpa Yuga, the worship of the deity in the temple. Archanam. And in Kali Yuga, the performance of Nam Sankirtan. And to teach each of these four separate methods, there's four separate avatars who are to appear at the early part of each age. If you're going to teach the method of bhakti yoga for a particular age, there's no sense appearing at the end of the age. You know, it's an introductory course that has to be taught in the beginning to get things started. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for example, appeared in the dawn of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga just had begun. We think it's 4,500 years ago, you know, 4,500 years, 5,000 years before Krishna was there. Kali Yuga began. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared almost 5,000 years later. For us, that's a long time. That makes, you know, relative to Lord Chaitanya, Krishna is prehistoric, according to our measurement. Practically out of the ancient scope, into the, you know, Stone Age, prehistoric scope. But that's our measurement. That's our limited vision. From the Vedic point of view, it's a blink of an eye. 5,000 years. The dawn, how long does the dawn last? If you don't pay attention to it, it goes right past you. 48 minutes, two gantikas, is the actual time of the transition period from night to day. The light starts appearing very dimly and up to the point where the sun actually rises. That is the dawn. And it's 45 minutes or so. Short period relative to the whole 24 hours. And then there's a dusk. There's an equal opposite period when the sun is setting. And it becomes dark. From the time the sun is actually set to the time that there's no light left and it's pitch black, that's the dusk. So in the dawn of the Kali Yuga, which lasts 5,000 years, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, before the end of that 5,000 years, before the sun has actually risen, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears. Before the day actually begins. Before the Kali Yuga actually really got began. The full effect of Kali Yuga does not appear in that transition period. It really appears after the 5,000 years of the transition. But now that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared, that, again, is another stay of execution, another delay of the actual beginning of the real effects of Kali Yuga. We haven't seen the real effects of Kali Yuga. If you want to see that, then wait around for another 10,000 years. It will be delayed for another 10,000. Those who are eager to see Kali in action will have to wait another 10,000 years. This is the effect of this Yuga Dharma avatara. That avatar is not superfluous. What do we need him for? We already have all these other avatars who are doing everything necessary. Leela avatars and Guna avatars, they're taking care of everything. This, one may think that this Yuga Dharma teacher is just superfluous. Someone else can do it. Why does God himself have to do this, and why is it such an important avatar? But look at the influence. The actual effects of Kali Yuga are being forestalled just by the presence and the influence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just by his having come and taught his friends to sing and dance with him. That's all he did. What did he do? He didn't organize any rebellion against the government. He didn't write any books. He didn't preach anything really subversive other than chant Hare Krishna. Stay in your position and chant Hare Krishna. And he wrote this, eight verses of instructions, which I don't think, break the law of any country. Kirtana Niyak Sadahari, is that illegal anywhere? Yeah. Is it against anybody's religion? Always glorify God? Is that against the principles of Islam or Judaism or Christianity? So he wasn't really an iconoclast or a political reformer like some fools tried to make him out to be. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu simply chanted and encouraged others to chant Krishna's names. Bolo Krishna, Bojo Krishna, Koro Krishna Shiksha. This is Nityananda Prabhu on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preaching. Just vibrate the name Krishna, worship Krishna, and follow Krishna's instructions. And Krishna's instructions are also simple. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Think about me, be my devotee. What does it mean to be Krishna's devotee? I'm thinking about him, doesn't that make me his devotee? Well, Kamsa was thinking about him, but he didn't think himself a servant of Krishna, he thought himself an enemy of Krishna. So you have to think about Krishna, but have a favorable relationship with Krishna. Identify yourself as his devotee. I don't think Kamsa was wearing these neck beads, because he didn't want to acknowledge himself as a servant of Krishna. We should be wearing these. And we should be wearing the mark of his feet, footprint on our head. And other ways, we should be dressing like Krishna's devotees and acting like Krishna's devotees and thinking ourselves to be Krishna's devotees. Madhyaji, worship me. Our worship is Harinam Sankirtan, our 16 rounds, whatever extra rounds we chant, and the work we do for Krishna. This is our yajanam, madhyaji. Worship Krishna. Worship him by our devotional practice. Mam namaskuru, and bow down to Krishna. When do you have to bow down? When there's a question of insubordination, then you have to acknowledge your subordination. The king says, I want that enemy destroyed. Or, go to the kitchen and cook a feast. The king issues an order, and the servant says, Yata gyapati raja, as the king orders. It's expected that the servant, when given an order that may be troublesome, it may be questionable, he just tells the king, whatever you order, I do it. That's namaskuru. That you don't argue with Krishna. He wants you to do something, you do it. Without question. Bow down, submit. Don't be
be Krishna's rival. Don't second-guess Krishna. Don't disagree with him. Don't think that he doesn't know what he's doing. An insubordinate servant will argue with the king. But Maharaj, you know, we had a feast 2 days ago. You know, you sure you want to have another feast? Or that enemy over there is not really our enemy. You sure you want to attack him? That's an insubordinate servant who doesn't just say, as Maharaj orders, but argues with him. So we shouldn't, in our minds or openly, argue with Krishna. We should accept his opinions. And accept the opinions of his representatives. Those who we can recognize are as his representatives, we should accept their opinions. The fact that Krishna is being identified as a Yuga Dharma avatar, he's more than that. You may say, well, that's selling him short. That's an understatement, just to say that he's the teacher of the principles of religion for this age. He's much more than that. But even saying only that is saying a lot. It's saying that whatever his opinion is must be accepted. Dharma samstapanartaya. It's one of Krishna's functions. It's not everything. But Krishna comes to establish what are the principles of religion. We don't imitate what he does. It doesn't mean we should also have 16,000 wives or hundreds of thousands of girlfriends because Krishna did. We don't imitate, but we listen, we obey. We hear his instructions. Where are they? Bhagavad Gita and other places. If Krishna gives many instructions in the Bhagavatam also. So we should hear those instructions of Krishna and follow them. Make them the basis of our behavior. Judge everything according to what Krishna's opinion is. So Garga Muni has indirectly revealed that Krishna is the one who establishes the principles of religion for the age in which he appears. Among his other activities and functions, this is very significant. And therefore you, Nanda Maharaj, although you're thinking you're not his father, you're just his stepfather, still, you should be very proud of this Krishna. And take care of him very nicely. He's going to do very important things. You're responsible, Nanda Maharaj, to assure his protection and raise him up nicely. Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? Yes, Nityanapu, and then... Okay.
There's one article in DTG, Devotee, in which he told that... she wrote that Krishna has appeared to establish the moral and ethical principles. And he quoted as a quotation, as a proof of that, Dharma Samstapanartaya.
Yes.
However, it appeared a little bit strange to me, and then I've seen how all the acharyas commented on Gita, on this verse, and how Srila Prabhupada in all his lectures he explained this verse. Something like in 95 cases out of 96, Prabhupada told that it is Krishna came, Dharma Samstapanartaya line means Krishna came to give a pure devotional service.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this article is talking that what he came to is to teach morality.
Yeah. Then what happened? I sent a message to the devotee showing that I put the quotes of acharyas and Prabhupada's lectures, and I told that generally 99.9% everywhere is explained as that it's bhakti yoga.
Yes.
And the devotee replied that it's an esoterical explanation, but I'm aiming in my article to preach to the general mass of people, so therefore I don't put that esoteric explanation. So is that justified? I don't know. Is it okay?
No, it isn't. I think he's wrong. Our business is to preach pure devotional service. We're preaching Bhagavatam, we're not preaching Mahabharata. We may have Mahabharata in our bookstores. That's okay, it's part of the Vedic literature. But our prime shastra is the Bhagavatam, which preaches a much more radical project. The project of pure devotional service, not of just becoming good. So I don't think we should preach like that. That Krishna came to teach us to be good. That's there too. By teaching pure devotional service, you're teaching the principles of goodness, of morality also. That is the highest morality. But you can't just, you know, ignore the essence and emphasize the circumstantial or the secondary part, because that will attract the general public. I think that's unfaithful to unchaste to our sampradaya, that we're not preaching pure devotional service. We're preaching something else. That's not acting as direct representatives of our sampradaya. And start establishing some other program to attract people.
Even though, like, maybe in his article, finally he came to the point that...
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
But the point was that we take the verse and we comment on the verse in a way that acharyas do not comment on it, so it seems to be...
Well, I mean, you can come up with a new interpretation if it serves the purposes, if it does come around. Prabhupada said it like this. Your preaching of Bhagavad Gita is successful if you can make a person surrendered like Arjuna surrendered. So it's not stereotyped that you have to say things exactly the same way and follow all the same formulas. But you judge by the results. If you make a person surrender and become a pure devotee, then whatever you did is appropriate. You can say all sorts of stuff and go to, you know, follow, you know, get in like a needle by saying whatever will attract people. But the end result has to be that someone will surrender to Krishna. You can't expect everybody will surrender, but at least you see that somebody becomes a serious devotee. Then you know you're preaching successful. So if this devotee thinks he's going to do that by his method, let's see the results.
It would be a little dangerous because then devotees will think, let me try this and... Later, I see the results, and he makes a mess.
Well, see, you know, it's the responsibility of the editors of Bhakti Godhead magazine to judge what they're going to publish. Yeah, what kind of innovative preaching techniques we're going to test out in Bhakti Godhead? That's what the editors would be careful about. I don't know. You think that it was inappropriate? You had that discussion. I tend to agree with you. Without having seen the actual article, yeah. Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. I have one question. One time, in this verse, it is said that Krishna had assumed three colors.
Yes.
Shukla, Rakta, Tathakta.
And then Idanim, now the fourth one.
No, the fourth one. And at the same time, they said that the Lord Chaitanya is a future incarnation. So he's listed in the...
Well, because Gauga Muni is just counting the previous Kali Yuga. You know, he's measuring four yugas, but he's looking back to the past rather than looking ahead of the current appearance. He's going back to the previous three, and that makes four. That makes one complete cycle. So he's just not looking at. The next appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's looking at the previous time. And Lord Chaitanya only appears as such, the full manifestation of Lord Chaitanya, only once in a day of Brahma, the same time that Krishna appears. In previous Kali Yugas, someone else appears to be the Yugdharma avatar, a representative. And the color is different. It's not that every Kali Yuga Yugdharma avatar is yellow. Okay, I'm not sure. Yeah, okay. Yes. Do you have more detail about that?
Yeah, I was interested in the same thing some time ago, and we banned it on, I think it was page 83 of Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada makes a comment that the Yuga avatar and the other Kali Yugas is black, four-handed, and he teaches also them Padam Sankirtan, but to the point which elevates the jivas to Vaikuntha.
Yes. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay, but Pralhada Prabhu had something. Let's hear. Okay, on this point, please.
Yeah. I remember in Chaitanya Mangala, Lord Chaitanya Thakur describes this verse and explains why yellow is mentioned.
Yes.
Before, maybe you remember. I don't remember, but he describes it. This description. Comment.
Like you said.
Yeah, on his question.
Yes.
Is Lord Chaitanya Thakur addresses this question and some two pages he very extensively describes it.
Yes.
But I forgot what what is that? So if you like it, please.
Thank you. Yes, Prabhupada.
Do we have any other evidence in any other scripture that the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord?
Well, there's some evidences, although they're slight things and they could be interpreted differently. If you look in chapters 3 or 4 of Adi Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's one place in which, in one purport, Prabhupada gives several quotes, 8 or 9 quotes from Upanishads, mostly Upanishads, that can be taken as, and also Vishnu Sahasranam, which can be taken as references to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What was it? Suvarna Varna Hemango Varangas Charanangati. Those are actually two different statements. It's not two halves of one verse. They're from two different places in the Vishnu Sahasranam. So one statement is, and it's describing Lord Chaitanya as a grihastha, that he's golden color and wears golden clothing, and he's got golden bangles on his arms and legs. And then the other verse says, sannyasa krit shamapshanto nishta shanti parayanaha. He takes sannyas, he's self-controlled, peaceful, and dedicated to the principles of nishta shanti, to the transcendental principles of devotional service. Shanti parayana, he's dedicated to the peaceful consciousness. This is taken by Prabhupada, actually I think it comes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita. Taken as reference, I think Krishna's Kaviraj also refers to it in the text of Chaitanya Charitamrita, that verse, those two verses from the Vishnu Sahasranam, as evidence referring to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's the Vishnu Sahasranam spoken by Bhishma in the Mahabharata. And there are some other references from various Upanishads. Okay. And then there's an entire Chaitanya Upanishad, which exists also. That was discovered and published by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay. And it was translated and published by Kushikadar Prabhu some years ago. Yes, sir.
Krishna is Yuga Avatar for Dwapara Yuga?
Yes. According to Sridhar Swami, he's appearing at the cusp. He's appearing at the end of Dwapara Yuga, so he's the Yuga Avatar for both ages, for Dwapara and Kali. And it's anomalous, it's unusual that he's appearing at the end of the age to teach the principles. Dwapara Yuga is considered backwards anyway. That somehow, you know, the two ages are inverted. Treta means third, and Dwapara means second, but they're appearing the second first, the third first, and then the second. Treta first, and then Dwapara. So they're backwards anyway. And so, Aditavan Dwapara Adau, Pitur Dvaipayanadaham. That Shukadev says, I heard the Bhagavatam, I studied the Bhagavatam from my father, Dwapara Adau, at the beginning of Dwapara Yuga. But that means at the end of Dwapara Yuga, because Dwapara Yuga is backwards. The end of Dwapara Yuga is called the Dwapara Adi, the beginning of Dwapara Yuga. Don't ask me how, you know, time is going backwards, but that's how they describe it. That the end of Dwapara Yuga is considered the beginning of Dwapara Yuga. And so Krishna appeared at the end of Dwapara Yuga and the beginning of Kali Yuga. So he can be the Yuga Dharma Avatar, he's black, he can be the Yuga Dharma Avatar for both ages. For those who don't know Lord Chaitanya and think there's no avatar in Kali Yuga, they let Krishna be the Yuga Dharma avatar for Kali Yuga also, because there's nobody else. They don't recognize Lord Chaitanya. And that's the way that Sridhar Swami explains it in his commentary. Just like Chandigarh is the capital for both Haryana and Punjab. That's right on the border. Like that. Krishna is the Yuga Dharma avatar for both ages. They're combined. You can read in the Bhagavad Gita and the Uddhava Gita instructions that apply to both ages. Instructions on deity worship, instructions on Harinam Sankirtan are both there. Okay, Paladama Prabhu and then Jamavanya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not meant to be publicly revealed. He's Chana Avatar. In the Bhagavatam, does say that you're Chana in Kali Yuga. That doesn't mean that you don't appear, but you appear disguised. So he's in disguise. He's not meant to be advertised in advance. So there's some subtle things that could make you understand Lord Chaitanya is coming. But it's not supposed to be publicly announced to everybody. Therefore, Suta Goswami, Shukadeva weren't supposed to talk about the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. They only do it very subtly in ways that ordinary people cannot grasp. Okay? It's intentional. But Jamavan had something and then Guru Sevananda. Or is it urgent?
No, because I am watching fruits there.
Okay, please. Come, please.
That Jagannatha, Baladeva, Subhadra, they have all four colors in different proportions. I was noticing this one day. They have yellow, red, white, and black. All
yes.
Colors in all three. And I was thinking, why? No? But Jagannatha is more black, and Baladeva is more white, and Subhadra is more yellow.
Yes.
But all three have four colors. So I was just thinking, I don't know that what to ask, but just an observation.
Yes, well, Jagannath is present not only in Kali Yuga, he goes back to the previous ages. He's around all the ages, anyway, I think. I don't know when the original establishment of Jagannath was, how far back. The current temple is 3,000 years old, but is much older than that. So Jagannath lives through the different ages. He's not just a one Yuga avatar. So, all four colors.
In these four colors, Maybe they are the basic colors.
These are the primary colors. Jagannath, you know, is colored simple, basic colors, not subtle colors. Uh-huh. He's got simple shape, big round eyes, you know, round body. This is simple. It's like a 3-year-old child could design such a deity. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Jump over.
I had a question that Hanuman wanted to ask.
Okay.
I'm not going to identify who, but there's a certain camp, and one of the main points that they're stressing, this is about what you're talking about after you read the first paragraph, they constantly are stressing this shloka from Upadeshamrita, Tishtan Vrajetan Anuragi Jananogami. They say that you have to find a devotee and hear from him.
Yes.
And then, I guess what they're advocating is Raghunuga Bhakti, is that when you have attraction for a certain pastime, like if you need to hear these pastimes, say someone hears about Damodar Leela, or they hear about Bala Leela, or Gopi, they'll hear a certain Leela, and then they'll have attraction, and they stress that you should continue hearing more along that line, because that's indicating something.
Yes.
And to back it up, you know, they give these evidences like this verse and other verses, and they're advocating that this is a natural propensity, because if you're having attraction, it means that this is what you should pursue and how you should proceed.
Yes.
But it doesn't seem bona fide, because to me, how do you know that attraction, that certain pastime, isn't just based on certain psychological or physical conditioning you've had in this life? For example, I'm a male, I'm in a male body. The idea of thinking of, you know, Krishna in a conjugal relationship is not appealing, because I have a certain conditioning.
Don't these devotees have a spiritual master?
Yes.
Okay. Has a spiritual master certified them as fit to begin Raghunuga's practice? Has the guru told them to do that? Yes. Has the Guru said, you're ready to know your Sarupa and pursue it? You can think about your eternal relationship with Krishna. You're ready for that? Has the Guru told them?
It seems that that's what he's asking.
Well, okay, either the Guru is right in doing that or he's wrong. Yeah. I don't know, because we don't know who it is, I'm not going to say. Yeah, it's not a bogus practice. If it's done, if the bona fide guru knows what he's talking about and tells the disciple, knowing that, you know, and correctly tells the disciple that you're ready to begin Raghunuga Bhakti, that's what we're practicing for. One day, we'll be able to do it. And why should we do it if it's a bogus practice? We're meant to do that. That's what Rupa Goswami teaches. So he's teaching in Upadeshamrita, and Prabhupada decided to publish Upadeshamrita. You could have kept it from us, not published it. He published it, translated it in English, gave purports. And this is what Rupa Goswami teaches in Upadeshamrita. That's the verse you quoted, Rupa Goswami. How can it be bogus? But it has to be done appropriately. Bona fide guru authorizing a bona fide disciple to begin that practice when he's ready. The question is, when someone who's not ready is, you know, or has been told by a guru wrongly that he's ready when he isn't, or he's not listening to his guru, he's just making up his own mind, then we got problems.
So, I guess then, like if this, if we're going to, you know, we accept that process because it is given, but it seems then it's more not so, such a, you can't make it as a general statement, but more as a personal, like the disciple should come to the guru and say, you know, I have attraction to this certain pastime, could I hear about, focus on that more? Or?
Yes. Just like brain surgery is bona fide, but only bona fide practice by a licensed brain surgeon. Yeah. I can't take a knife and start carving apart your brain. That's attempted murder. You know, but a brain surgeon can do it. So if you're authorized, then you can do this practice only. It's a serious matter to begin to do such a thing. Just as more serious than brain surgery. Okay, but Hanuman is next turn. Yes, Hanuman.
Couldn't you do something to pick another body?
You mean pick your own body?
Couldn't you?
How are we going to do it? Have an idea?
Couldn't you do a special thing which would pick a different body?
Actually, you can. You can. Like you want to go to the heavenly planet, you can perform a certain sacrifice. Agnidra was attracted to her Apsara, dancing girl from heaven, and he went to her planet by meditating on her. So you can do something, yeah. You can try to get a particular body, and you can find out how to do it. But there's no guarantee that it will work. You can try, but it might not work. You know, you got to do everything right, and still somebody might cheat you. You might do everything right, and still they don't give it to you. You know, just like, you know, you buy a ticket, you make a reservation, and then, you know, last minute they say the train's canceled, and you can't go. The train breaks down, doesn't go. The bus breaks down. Something happens. No guarantee until you get there. Until you actually get there, no guarantee it's going to work. You know, but it might work. You're right. Okay. Thank you. We have Bhagavad. Bhagavad, you have someone else had his hand, but go ahead.
Yes, yeah. It's about twice, yes, a little bit I read before, but twice Sri Sada didn't mention name of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because it has been mentioned publicly, then there will be so many Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will appear.
Oh, we'll get phony Chaitanya Mahaprabhus if they're advertised.
I think it's somewhere.
That's very interesting.
Because
yes, the purport? Yes. Because we have phony Chaitanya Mahaprabhus and lots of phony Nityanandas afterwards. So at least to prevent that from happening before, not to confuse things, yeah, it wasn't advertised. Yes. That's a good reason. Yes, sorry.
Just a small point.
Yes. Karmana Daivanetrina. So it's that means it's not generally not our choice. Yeah, well, that sanction means that they're giving permission. Also means that they're the ones who knows what's going to happen. We don't really know. Daiva, the demigods know, but we don't know. We can put in a request. I can do a Jyoti Shtoma Yajna. That's my official application for an entrance to heaven. But it's like you go, like when a, you know, an Indian goes to the American embassy to try to get a visa. You know, good luck. Yeah, you might get permission to go to America, but you might get refused. Yeah. Okay, thank you. It's Daiva Netrina. You go up, you know, you have to stand online, give your application, and it's the higher authorities who actually decide whether you can have it or not. Okay, and your karma has judged. You know, you got to do everything right. You know, one thing is wrong. You forgot to bring your photograph. Sorry, refused. Yeah. Okay. I thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.